We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 102. Unmissable Opinions brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. Thanks again for tuning in. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes wherever you're listening to the show. You can find us on social media for all these different links. We're on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod or at HiltonD13 for me, on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, our closed Facebook group, which you're going to hear their questions later on in La Ronda. That's tbpod.link/group. We also have some deeper dives and discussions, and you can help us out on the Patreon to continue making these shows at tbpod.link/Patreon. Well, I'm not going to waste any time. It's time for episode 102. I'm Dan Hilton, joined by my co-host for the day, Adil, better known, obviously, by his moniker on Twitter, Barca19Stats, which gives you all the good stuff there. So his Twitter handle will be in the show notes. You can also click and give him a follow on Twitter. Today, we're going to answer the question that since our last show, the thing that has happened, other than the Champions League draw, a match against Huesca, but more importantly, the transfer window has come to an end. So for the rest of this season, at least till January, this is the Barcelona squad as we know it, where we will see some guys heal up, Alenia or a Busquets. They'll probably be fit in somewhere along the line, both starting with the Barcelona B team and then coming up. But by and large, you look at that first team. So the question is going to be, how did Barcelona do in the transfer window? We're going to break down the ins and outs. And Adil, again, I haven't let you get a word in edgewise, but I want to say thanks for joining the show. And I know it was on a little bit of short notice and schedules got a little confused, but again, you've been accommodating and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Dan. Always a pleasure to be with you on the pod.
Well, Adil, I'll list them out for you and then a little back and forth response onto some of the ins and outs. But the big picture here is that Barcelona brought in Malcolm, Arthur, Clement Linglet, Arturo Vidal, Carlos Alenia was promoted, Rafinha and Munir are back from loans from a season ago. Out were Yuri Mina, Lucas Digne, Gerard Deulofeu, Aleix Vidal, and Marlon. Loaned out were Andre Gomes, Paco Alcácer, Douglas, whose contract is up after this year, Paulinho, who will be sold to Evergrande at the end of the season for 50 million euros, and Adrian Ortola on loan. And of course, Andres Iniesta went to Japan. So it took me a lot longer to read the outs than the ins. And going into this summer, Adil, it seems like the prevailing idea was that, yes, Barcelona needed a little more quality, but they really had to replace quality, and that meant that they had to make a little money on the exodus. So I guess the first question I'll ask you, Adil, how comfortable or how well do you think Barcelona did in terms of the bottom line, in terms of the monetary rewards of the transfer window?
We can say that we had a very busy summer. Very busy transfer window. I think the priority was to bring on players who are suitable for the type of football that Valverde wants to implement in his second season. But also, we had the burden of loading the bench warmers who were not really up to the task in Valverde's first season. So that's why we can see that we had a lot of players going sold or going on loan for different types of teams, but we managed to get four big names, big in especially in their potential, Langlet and Malcolm and Dahl and Arthur. I think we managed to have quality now on the bench, players who can come during the game and change the course of the game, who can give us the depth that we lacked last season. And we will see how this will work out during the season. I think the financial aspects is secondary in this context. It's always the sporting value of the transfers that will be important to judge at the end of the season.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I do understand it as well. But I think taking losses for those few seasons, well, I guess last season even, the transfer window with Neymar leaving for the amount of money, I mean, the greatest amount of money ever being moved around in a transfer window in terms of one single player, and then Coutinho and Dembele coming in between January and the summertime. And I think it really just threw everything on its head when you're talking about really, really, really big amounts. And so for those four guys that come in, speaking of the quality, the one thing that they say backlash of things missing was the midfield didn't have a big game breaker or a starter. But to me, through these few games already this season, you see that Ernesto Valverde is going to be starting what's almost come to be kind of known as his Gala 11, with Sergio Roberto being at right back, and then Pique, Umtiti, Alba, of course, Ter Stegen in net, Busquets and Rakitic in the midfield, with Coutinho figuring out and learning and getting better and better at that role as the left interior, and then up top, that three of Dembele, Suarez, and Messi. That seems to be, as what we've seen with Valverde, he likes to go with what he knows and trusts, and that's the team that's starting the season, trying to learn how to mesh together. And so that means everybody else on the squad, whether it's Nelson Semedo at right back, of course, Rafinha and Munir. Rafinha, because of that Real Betis move that was going to happen, really close to happening, but didn't eventually happen and fell through, he still hasn't made the squad list, but you expect that to change since he'll be here all fall long. And then Alenia, still injured, could be, you know, get a little more playing time once his, or coming off the bench as a substitute, probably better said, once his recovery process goes along for Barca B. And then with Vidal, Lenglet, Arthur, and Malcolm, we've already seen them feature a little bit coming off the bench as options. So really was strengthening that bench. That's what it is. It's that there was no big starting 11 player that was added to the, or injected into the team. The team is the same 11 who started last season. The difference, though, is that Coutinho, it appears, will be that left interior. And just from a tactical perspective, it seems like the way that Valverde is going to play this season with that 4-3-3, unless he goes back to his 4-4-2, it looks like they're just changing the way that they were going to play with the same starting 11, which will just be supplemented by, as you mentioned, experience with Vidal. Lenglet is of the highest quality, who can both substitute for Pique or Umtiti. And then you have Arthur, who is getting rave reviews by not only the media, but, and they're not just, it's not just the media hyping him up before he was ever with Barcelona while he's still playing for Gremio, that he's going to be the future Xavi, but his teammates are hyping him up and seem to really, really believe in his quality. And that's an important thing, and they might just be doing it for confidence reasons or for press reasons, but it seems like there is something special, and not only do the fans understand it and culés, but it looks like the players agree. And Malcolm, in a similar vein, you want to say that he's always going to be compared to and signed because Dembele need to be pushed, but I think in their own right, they're a little bit of different players, and I think they can also be utilized together eventually if that's where the point in the season goes, and we'll get to that in La Ronda. But as you said, there is depth there that was added, and what was lost was players that you just don't have a confidence in, whether it was Alcácer, who was really decent. He's on loan with Dortmund, but the time that he was with Barcelona, again, he was decent when he was on, but he never really got that chance to shine. So how will you know that he was going to put in goals when he goes weeks without playing? And Andre Gomes was a player that, again, was well talked about on this show. You just didn't have the confidence that he was going to be a game breaker, as you said, a guy of impact. So I think the whole point is that Barcelona brought in guys who could impact a game and make a change when they're inserted in the 60th, 70th minute. And then that's not even counting Rafinha and Munir, who are, again, two guys that already are comfortable at the Camp Nou, know what they're doing, and we'll see what they can do in supplemental roles.
Exactly. As you said, Valverde has already his eye on his starting 11, his Gala starting 11, if we can say, with fantastic four, Coutinho, Dembele, Suarez, and Messi up front. Now we have the players who can allow Valverde to make rotations more, to play the lesser games of La Liga and the Copa games with the bench warmers and the youngsters, without really having to worry about results. This way we can have our key players with fresh legs and with enough juice to discuss the decisive moments of the season in La Liga and in Champions League with enough energy and enough determinations to go and win double of La Liga and the Champions League.
And the one player that I mentioned leaving, Andres Iniesta for Japan, my view on this is that it's probably a season too early, as he, even with a reduced role, he still would have been one of the best options for the team, at least through the season. But we know why he left. We understand and we support his decision for going to Japan and finally leaving Barcelona. But that said, do you get the feeling that there's still going to be some kind of Iniesta-sized hole? Or do you think that Barcelona being different now, it's an evolution and they are changing, not necessarily away from what the things that Iniesta did well, but do you find that it's going to be you're going to feel like it's a big loss, or is it merely just we think about him as even a younger player and we think about the quality that he's always had?
It's definitely a big loss for everything that Iniesta represents and for everything Iniesta does on the field. We missed Xavi. His place is still vacant to this moment. We don't have a player with his quality, with his stature to dictate the tempo and to make the kind of impacts on the game that we used to have when we had both Xavi and Iniesta. Now that Iniesta is gone, like you said, it's an evolution. Coutinho is already filling in that last interior role. He's doing well so far in the first three or four games of this season. I think it's a matter of cohesion and understanding between the players who are in attack and midfield. If Valverde can reach this cohesion between those four players, Coutinho, Messi, Suarez, Dembele, without heavily impacting the defensive role of the team, I think we can have destructive force up front. We can see that Valverde is already trying to work this mechanism in the first La Liga games, because he played those games with the same starting 11. I think he will make some rotations afterward, but for now he needs to find the perfect balance for the team, so those players with big quality can play together and work together without having those defensive problems like we've seen against Huesca or against Valladolid.
So it sounds like we both agree. And it also is seen that the prevailing notion is that Barcelona had a successful transfer window. And now that it's easy to say that it was successful on paper, but now that we've seen it in action, but by action, I mean with those additions coming off as bench players and substitutes. So again, really with him having the starting 11 and the majority of the minutes played so far this season with guys that were with the team last year, it does seem though that, yes, it might just be the early season, but there are still tactical things to work out. But when you look at who was brought in, as much as it seems like, again, you can just be happy with the names on paper, the guys they brought in were all established guys who are going to be bringing in certain things. And we've seen them showcase those things already in the preseason, whether, again, it was Arthur, who has not completely flopped, Malcolm, who looks like he's got some energy to him and some skill, Lenglet, who, again, is a center back who knows what you're going to bring, and Vidal has already played like Vidal in the short minutes that he's got. So it does appear that Barcelona unequivocally have approved, and I think that's where we improved, and we both do land on that side of the fence. Is that correct, Adil? You think we can put a bow on this one, this conversation about the transfer window, and just say that, you know, money-wise, they wound up coming out well enough? When it comes to the depth of the squad, they improved it. And when it comes to quality of who they brought in, it seems like they brought in talented players. So it seems like that's three wins for me.
Yeah, exactly. I think that We can count Dembele also as a new signing, because last season he had so many injuries and was in and out of the team that he couldn't really impose himself. Now that he's having a good start, I think that with the signings we had, the team is stronger, has more quality, and in the decisive moments of the season, I think those four new signings will reveal to be very very decisive in the hands of the big title.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, and that'll kind of wrap up La Gran Pregunta in pretty neat and tidy fashion. And so that moves us into La Ronda, which I think today is going to be a much more hard-hitting and nuanced discussion as opposed to La Gran Pregunta, which is usually just a lot about hot takes. But we're going to have to take some chances here in La Ronda. First, questions from Dean and Charlie, and this is concerning that Barcelona versus Girona match where we've been hearing about the match that's scheduled to be in the U.S., that they want to be pushing it through in early 2019, and while it doesn't seem like it's completely over the line, hey everybody, Future Dan here. This Girona versus Barcelona match is officially set to take place in January, the 27th to be exact, and Girona, being the home team, it's been reported, will be reimbursed any ticket costs for the original match that was originally set to take place, obviously, at Girona. So this is an official thing that has happened just after we recorded the show. Just to let everyone know that this is happening. Those season ticket holders for Girona that are not going to be making the trip to the U.S. will receive a 20% discount on their season ticket, and about 5,000 free tickets will be distributed for the first Catalan Derby, if you will, or obviously the first match between Barcelona and Girona at the Camp Nou on September the 23rd. There's also the option of a 40% drop on season ticket costs if the fans refuse or just choose not to go to either of those matches. So that's actually the official situation right now that both teams are dealing with. All right, back to normal, regular, present Dan. Even the Girona edition of Le Sportiu, which is the sports paper in Girona, they have basically said that it's everybody coming to Miami in the U.S., that it's going to be a La Liga match, and it's going to be Barcelona versus Girona. And now, Adil, I know you're in Morocco, so there was a little bit of early backlash against the Spanish Super Cup being played in Morocco, and I think these are... I think these are... You can't even compare the two, because, again, Morocco is, what, an extra 45-minute plane ride, if that, to get to that stadium, and even then, you know, there was a Moroccan league formerly playing in the top division in Spain. Their neighbors, they're right there, as opposed to what is an 8+ hour flight across the Atlantic Ocean to get to Miami. And more importantly, because now it seems like it's going to be Barcelona versus Girona, what started out as conspiracy ideas has really come into, did La Liga choose this because of the Catalan independence movement? Are they just trying to quiet something, ruffle feathers? And then, it's just reactive and counter-reactive, where then the reaction to that became, well, if they're going to put the Barcelona-Girona match to try to curb some of the Catalan independence, we'll say cheers and discussion, if they're trying to table that, it seems to me that a lot of people have said that they're going to double down on it, and that means that they're going to try harder and make it louder if you're going to try to remove it. And that's a lot of time that's what happens with any protest, any movement, that, you know, when a big body tries to quiet it, it just makes it even louder, much like, you know, the Hydra 2 more will pop up. And it seems to me that that's where the discussion is going. But a deal with all these times that La Liga has made these changes, the other part of me says that this, if it's official, the players are going to complain, they're not going to be happy, and yes, they did threaten a strike, but if this all goes through and the money is there, the way that money moves things forward, it seems that it might just happen, and it might happen without a yell, without much of a stir being caused. And it's, I find this a discussion so polarizing, because obviously we can't foresee the future, we don't know how it's going to happen. So it's either that Barcelona Girona in Miami happens and it just explodes because the players don't want to do it, or they threaten to strike, or they do strike, or that the Catalan independence movement is at the forefront of everything because it just causes more trouble, or because of the big money involved, does this kind of just wind up being a lot of complaining and then go off without a hitch? I think both are just as reasonably likely.
Yeah, and you can see that La Liga doesn't have really a clear strategy for this. They struck a deal for 15 years for playing La Liga games in the US before having the consent of the teams, of the players. They don't know so far officially which games or how many games will be played. They say there will be only one game for this season. First, it was Betis against Barcelona. Now they say it's Girona against Barcelona. And political discussion aside, I think that it's not fair for the host team to play a game in the U.S. because they lose the advantage of the home. And when they lose that, it can affect the results of the game, whether it will be 1 point or 3 points. That could be, at the end of the season, very decisive. Teams like Girona, for example, can be playing to stay in La Liga, and those points can cause relegation. I don't know really the reasoning behind this move, especially that, like I said, it's not the strategy behind it is not very, very clear, and we will see what will happen with the players who are collectively refusing to play this game in the US. Now the La Liga is moving forward with the plan. I really don't know what will happen, but we'll see.
Yeah, there's still so much up in the air, and we'll continue to get this question and have these discussions. But here's a little fun one, a deal that I'll let you tackle on your own. Mutas asked 21-year-old Neymar versus 21-year-old Dembele. And I think Mutas already answered his own question as well. And he says, what does Dembele need to do to get to Neymar level? 21-year-old Neymar was truly special, and you can tell the quality he had. And Dembele really still is a work in progress, even at 21. But again, he's only 21, and Dembele still has a lot to work on. And with 2 feet that work pretty well, both the left and the right, Dembele is is better than most guys his age, 21 years old, with both his left and his right, than they are with their best foot.
Yeah, and one thing is that Neymar and Dembele, I think they made the right move at the right time. At 21, Neymar was already in Barcelona. He was, footballistically, he was mature enough to be in a big team. It's the same for Dembele, but I think that for Dembele, he had a really tough time with injuries, and he couldn't really integrate the team quickly. Neymar, when he came with Tata Martino, he was already one of the stars of the team. We remember that season where Messi had a very worrying injury, and he wasn't really up to his level with the World Cup coming. We've seen that Neymar had some responsibility of the team. And now I think that Dembele, with the help of Messi and Suarez, and with the confidence of Valverde, I think he can be at the same level as Neymar was in the Luis Enrique season.
Yeah, I think the comparisons, unfortunately, are going to keep following Dembele because of the price that he was bought at and the level that he is capable of reaching. But to talk about guys that probably won't be reaching that level, Rick asks, what do we do with the likes of Denis Suarez and Rafinha and Sergi Samper, midfielders who didn't even make the squad last match versus Huesca? Should they just be using cup matches to the likes of Coutinho, Rakitic, and the rest can continue to just gel and work together? And Denis Suarez, you know, my guests have been kind of saying it in the past, and I'm not a defender of Denis Suarez. Certainly, my guest from last week, Barcelev, is the opposite of a Denis Suarez defender. But that said, it seems like Denis will not really ever get a sniff. He will most likely be not on the bench, but he'll be in the stands or not at the stadium most weeks. Rafinha and Samper, I'd say, was the same thing with Denis Suarez. Basically, Samper is going to heal up and, you know, just wait for either a loan or being sold in January, unfortunately. But for Rafinha, it appears that, you know, he has a role to play. You saw in the preseason, and you saw with Inter, more importantly, last year, that Rafinha is is of great quality, and he might have the argument, along with Vidal, for being the most talented sub coming off the bench. I think Rafinha is much more polished at this point and knows Barcelona even better than Arthur. So I think Rafinha really does have a role to play in this team, and it's not just cup matches. I think Rafinha, and when you talk about rotation, I think this is an important thing. As Eli also asked, should Arthur be starting more matches? I don't think the answer to that is simple. It's not yet for Arthur. I think he appears to have a lot of quality and appears to be figuring things out rather quickly, getting assimilated with the system and the Camp Nou. But that said, I think when you talk about rotation, you don't change the midfield three. Coutinho, Rakitic, Busquets doesn't, just for a Huesca match, turn into Rafinha, Arthur, Vidal, but instead it's going to be Rafinha coming in for Coutinho or for Rakitic, and then that guy gets a rest. And then the next match, Vidal comes in for Busquets, and it kind of works in that order. And I know Vidal and Busquets isn't the matchup. It's going to be Rakitic moving back to the defensive mid, and then Vidal coming into the midfield with Coutinho, or whatever it may have you be. I think that that rotation is, it's not just swap a whole group in for a whole group out, and that's something, a little bit of confusion we got. So with that said, I think Rafinha, he should be starting, and it wouldn't be surprising if he does get a start, not over Coutinho or Rakitic, but just to let them rest instead of, and I think that's the role he's going to play all season long.
Yeah, and we've seen he had a fantastic preseason with the team. He is, as you said, someone who can come off the bench and change the course of a game. The key here is the management of the players' minutes and games. I remember the first time I was on the pod with Francesc, I talked about this and how the lack of players' management hurt us on the long run. Now that we have those different profiles of the midfielders with enough quality to impact games, we can have many, many options for the midfield. Something also that get lost in discussions is that it's the manager and the coaching staff who is training those players every day. They have a better look at their form, at their readiness than us. So if a player is not a starter, if he's having a great week in training, I think that the manager is inclined to start him in the next game. Of course, it depends on the importance of the games, but for La Liga, for example, I think that we can give enough minutes to those midfielders, so we can have them in better form for the upcoming month of the season. For Samper, I think is like you said, it's just a matter of time. He had a very, very serious injury, so he couldn't really find a suitable team for him for now. For Denis Suarez, I think that he showed last season that he can have an impact as a sub. If he's good in training, I think Valverde will give him some chances.
Next one from Henry, asking about Busquets or Rakitic. Is Rakitic the ideal Busi replacement when needed? And Henry, I think you did answer your own question here, that Rakitic, the way they play, is set up best to play that defensive midfield role. We've also seen Sergio Roberto play there. And again, don't be too surprised if every now and again Valverde doesn't throw out a 4-4-2. And if he seems like the 4-3-3 isn't working, a formation shift could be happening. And we saw in the big matches last season, particularly in the Champions League with the group, and we'll get to that in a second, but with the heavy hitters in the group that Barcelona are facing, that 4-4-2 with the two defensive midfielders would not be all that surprising. So going with the traditional 4-3-3 with one, you know, Busquets being that, the Busquets role, and that's kind of where we're at with Busquets, is such an important player throughout the last, you know, decade plus, that we know that we now call it the Busquets role, in the same way that there's a Xavi role and the Iniesta role. And while it's taking seasons and time to get away from that idea that you need exactly an Iniesta type player and a Xavi type player and a Busquets type player to create this perfect midfield triumvirate, that just, you know, because of their profiles, and obviously those were three of the greatest in those positions ever, but I don't think it's – I think we're moving away from the point when it's just the Busquets role saying as a center defensive midfielder for Barcelona, this is what you do, X, Y, Z. That 4-4-2 last year showed us that not only do multiple players play it, but when Rakitic does play in that defensive midfield role, he does a little bit of his own stuff. He's a different player, but he does also do a good job of doing the things that are expected of Busquets, if that makes sense. And so I think the answer to Henry's question is unequivocally yes.
Yes, of course, I agree, Andrew.
All right, so not wasting any more time, Debdeep has two questions. So he has one question that I'm going to let you answer completely on your own, Adil, and I'm going to tackle the other one. His first one, can we finally be unabashedly optimistic about the season after the game last week, or was the Huesca game a poor indicator of things to come?
Personally, I'm always optimistic. We can't really judge on 3 or 4 games. Now we played 4 official games, the results were very promising. This is the best start of La Liga in the history of Barcelona, with 3 wins and a goal difference of 10. We also had 4 wins and 14 goals in the 4 games, if you count the Supercopa. So this is really promising from a statistical point of view. From a footballistic point of view, I think we can agree that we have glimpses of a very strong team, especially going forward with Messi and in his best form in years. I think that now we've seen the 100% complete Messi in attack. In the last 3 years, he can do everything, from scoring, from assisting, from creating chances, from dribbling, from breaking the lines. And with Dembele coming in his role, with Coutinho starting to get accommodated with his new role, I think that the only point of exclamation is maybe Luis Suarez. His form is going up and down. He doesn't really give the security and the confidence we had with him in his first years. But in the start of this season, we can see that despite him having some physical issues, that his mind is in the right place. Especially in this game against Huesca, he had a very good game. And from a confidence point of view, I think this will help him a lot to get back to his best self. I think that he also start to understand that he need to be rested from time to time. He just said that before the game against Roma in the Olympico, he shouldn't have played the 19 minutes against Leganés. And that shows a certain maturity that we didn't have in him before. So if we can have Luis Suarez in his best form, if Messi can continue to do his magic, if Dembele manages to implement himself in the starting 11 with his defensive duties, I think that Valverde has a big role in making a cohesive system that can go and compete for everything, especially for La Liga and the Champions League. And we are here for the ride, and we will enjoy it, and we will see what happens at the end of the season.
Well, Adil, you did a good job of answering Daniel's question, which was going to be the final question of the day, which is about the rotation, particularly of Suarez. And it even made mention, Daniel did, to the what he said about the Roma away leg. So the second part of Dead Deep's question, which I guess I'll handle here, is he says, where is Frances? And that's a question that we've been getting a lot. So I know I'm burying it deep into the 102 podcast, and it's been weeks and weeks. But I do want to give, again, as our listeners, faithful listeners, not only thank you for listening as Frances has been away, but I do want to just give a little more clarity that Frances has had a life change, and he's gone. He did have a big move, and I've mentioned that on the show before. And so with Frances in this big move, I'm going to let him speak on what this means for his role in the future of the podcast, but I will say that you have not heard, certainly not heard, the last of Frances, and the show will continue to go on. Again, I've had so many wonderful co-hosts. Adil, again, thank you for coming on this week, but we've had so many wonderful co-hosts for the last now about 2.5 or so months. And so Frances, again, he is still out there. He listened to the show. He hears you guys' questions. He's available on the tbpod.link/group. And again, you will hear from him shortly, I say in the near future, or even if it is in a little bit more than just a few weeks or what have you. It's going to be him to explain what his role with the show coming up is, what has been going on with him in his personal life, if he so is inclined to explain it. But again, Frances and I, we are still very, very, very good friends, on good terms. And again, he's always around and listening to this show. So hi, Frances. But the answer is that Frances is around, but not necessarily on the show. But again, he is not gone forever, and we have not heard the last of Frances. So again, thanks for all of the positive support that not only we've gotten since you've kind of stopped hearing his voice regularly, but also in terms of just asking for, again, the other half of this show for its first year plus of its existence. So again, thanks for the support, continued support, and we will be hearing from Frances soon. No worries on that. So let's move on from that topic and get a little lighter again. Our final question and deal of the day is a two-parter that were both were so good and important that I did not want to look over either. So again, usually if you ask questions in the Facebook group, as you can tell, you only get one of your two usually answered. So just asking one and sharing the love is a lot easier. But Henry asked two good ones, so I want to hit on both of these. First, this kind of a one-off here. Thoughts on Barcelona B's new signings in Ronald Araujo and Musa Vague. And the thinking behind these two signings is that while there are a lot of center backs on the Barca B roster, the center back pool at Barcelona going deeper, and not just about Eric Garcia moving to Man City all those years ago, but center back isn't really a deep position. So am I thinking about the Araujo signing in particular, a Uruguayan center back, is that Barcelona, yes, they are producing a lot of their own good players, but they can't get every single youngster. So bring a guy who's still a teenager into the system and giving him a few years in this much, much younger Barca B team with, we'll say, less responsibility as a Segunda Division B, where you're not necessarily worried about relegation, but the results should happen. And while they have lost their first two matches, did Barcelona B, I expect them to turn things around rather quickly. Since recently, Cucurella was shipped out on loan, so Juan Miranda, both being the backup to Jordi Alba and being the starter, and with very little substitution for him down with Barca B, Juan Miranda is going to have a big season, whether or not he likes it. But that said, maybe one of these multiple center-back options will be supplementing him at left back for Barca B, in the same way that for Alba, of course, we know Langlet and Titi can both supplement at left back. And the Musa Vague signing for me, and Adil, you can attest to this too, he was signed before the injury to Mate Mori, who I think is the most promising right back and has been since he was 13, 14 years old. He's got a long-term injury. He'll be out at least till February. And behind him, Guillerme Wam is a winger by trade and has been supplementing at right back. But the way you look at it, if they have a center back playing right back who's kind of out of position, again, none of them are really comfortable with the right back position, it seemed like Barcelona B all of a sudden wound up being really short. And then the big picture here, before again now Adil, and I didn't mean to monopolize this conversation, but it seems to me that Barcelona B got not rid of their dead weight, but they got rid of the players that were signed to help them through the Segunda Division A, and now that they are with the Bayside and everything is moved on, Juvenil A has moved up, including the coach in Pimienta. One or two signings does not change the philosophy of a team and does not change the way that things are working. These are merely very, very, very talented teenagers who are supplementing positions of need, you'd have to say, and I think they could be important parts of the puzzle moving forward, and guys that Barca does not that they were signed just for Barca B, but they were signed for the future of the first team as well. That's how talented these two are.
Yeah, exactly. And we can see that Pimienta is really relying heavily on juvenile A players. He knows them very well, and the core of his team are players from are products of La Masia. Those two signings are here to help the team. Unfortunately, Wage was injured early on his journey with Barça B, but he's a good player. We've seen him in the World Cup with the national team of Senegal. He has potential, and with the injury of Mateo and loan of Valencia to Bordeaux, this right back position that we had so many players in seems to be a problem for the team. Hopefully Wage will come back soon. Parejo is, for me personally, is an unknown, like it was Bueno. I hope he will fare better than Bueno did with the B team. But now that the team are in Segunda B, there is no pressure for relegation. I hope so. So Pimienta can really give special attention to developing players and making them ready for the jump for the first team.
And the final question again from Henry: what do you think of the Champions League group? And this is going to be a one-off feeling. We are going to go a deeper dive into previewing these teams, so you're not going to hear the big names now. Yeah, I'll say that they're facing Harry Kane and Luke de Jong for PSV, and Mauro Icardi up top. And you always worry about the attackers on the other team, but Inter Milan, a team, we'll say a little bit in transition, who are better than they were last season. They weren't bad last year, but Inter, if they can figure everything out with Nagelin from coming over from Roma, Inter certainly have quality, and that's kind of what you're afraid of. And then Tottenham as well, we know what they're capable of. They're trying to also go for a Premier League title, and they, in the same respect, or if you think that Barcelona have issues with their depth and rotation, Tottenham have basically kept, they didn't make a single transfer coming in, and it's basically the same team, and they're relying on youngsters as their bench players and backups, so they're trying to utilize their academy. And then PSV, the best in the Netherlands for two of the last 3 years, they have quality as well, but certainly an opponent that Barcelona should deal with handily. That said, I think my general reaction was not that Barcelona shouldn't win their group and potentially win their group easily, but because of the quality of these three opponents, it's not that, for me, the fear is that the group will not really be decided until the final match day. And even with that, these big matchups, you don't think about it even physically, but emotionally, getting up to play Tottenham twice, getting up to play Inter Milan twice, and even PSV, who are, as Man United, you can ask them, are not easy in the Champions League either, or Europa League. And so to get up emotionally for those six matches, I think not even going to hurt the Champions League campaign, because Barcelona are going to have to take care of business. Again, you don't lose to Inter at home, who should be the third place team in the group. You don't lose to them at home if you hope to win the Champions League trophy. You have to have a complete campaign. But that said, my worry is that because they're getting up, and obviously they're going to have to play the Gala 11 for those matches, that might hurt La Liga. And with Real Madrid seemingly doing well, you know that while Atletico Madrid and Valencia have dropped points already, they'll be back. Sevilla, Real Betis looks improved. So with that depth in La Liga, teams are going to be nipping at their heels as well. And this is going to be a difficult season, certainly, on all three fronts. And not that it wasn't in years past, but more so than with, I think that group means that you're going to have even heavier rotation in the Copa del Rey and all the way up through. In April and May, Rafinha is going to have to be that starring midfielder if you're going to win the Copa del Rey this season, even late on. I think that rotation has to happen, because it all can't work. Something has to give.
Yeah, exactly. And now that more so with this tough group, I think the focus should be on the double of La Liga and Champions League. We can give bench warmers and the youngster chances in the Copa del Rey games, something that we didn't do last season or the season before, and it hurt us in the long run. For the Champions League, I think that the group is tough, but personally I think that when you have big names, three hard teams that compete with you, that means that the chances of those teams losing points to each other is bigger, so it gives you kind of an advantage. Also, the fixtures of Barcelona, I think they have an advantage. They host PSV first. They can have those first 3 points and start in a good manner. And if things get complicated, they can rely on the fifth and sixth games. We have PSV away, and the last game is Tottenham at home. So even if things get complicated, we can get things done in the last two games. I think that this is a big test for Valverde and his skills of managing the squad. In La Liga, there are games where you can trust your bench, especially with the quality that we have now in the subs. You can trust your subs and reserve your key players for the important game of Champions League without hurting your chances in La Liga. And at the end of this year, in December, we will have a clearer look. Hopefully, we will be advancing from the group and we will be in the pole position in La Liga. And in any case, when La Copa starts, we should be always focusing on La Liga and Champions League, and giving rest for our key players in the Copa. We've won it in the last four years. We can afford to not compete for a Sevilla this year. So the focus, as Lionel Messi said, is Champions League. But I will also add that the important thing is that La Liga and Champions League for Barcelona go hand in hand. In our history, we've never won Champions League without winning La Liga. So when we are in a good position and when we manage to have a good squad, we always go all in for the two big competitions.
Yeah, certainly. And over the course of even doing this podcast and, you know, having these discussions with so many people, you know, Frances was always a hardliner on the fact that the treble is not something that should be expected. And I think we got to a point for Barcelona because of just the success of Pep Guardiola that the treble should... there's a sense of entitlement, unfortunately, that has happened. And I think, again, I even watching Huesca, I know they lost 8-2, but looking at that first half, I don't think it was even about that Barcelona got... It's okay that they got their tactics wrong. I think that happens. And I think the quality of our opposition, who were able to capitalize on Barcelona getting their tactics wrong, shows you that, again, no team in the league, even though, again, they lost 8-2, things did come off the rail, but goals, when a match is already lost, goals seem to be able to flow in a little easier. And again, having watched the Sevilla derby, there is quality in La Liga, especially in that top 6, 7, 8, and teams are going to test Barcelona, and it's silly to think that Barcelona could just or deserve the treble. It's extremely difficult, and the focus this year, as been stated, is to recapture the Champions League, is to end that reign from Real Madrid. Barcelona, it's time for them to recapture that one. That's going to be the focus, and La Liga, again, they want to get that Liga title, so whatever happens Copa del Rey, not to say that they're just giving up on that trophy, but I think it has to be a wash. There has to be focus elsewhere. And my final thought would be that October, it's been publicized that it just doesn't stop. It culminates in El Clasico, but October is jam-packed full of difficult matches and fixtures. But that said, in the same respect, the positive is that if Barcelona is able to navigate October and get through both La Liga and Champions League with success in the month of October, they're going to put themselves in pole position, as you said, Adil, to set themselves up for March and April and May, where not that things are easier, but that they've already done half the job. And that they can just only spend about 2 or 3 months putting the pedal to the metal, not worrying about any summer, big summer tournaments, not having to worry about a World Cup, and they can just go all in for those last 3 months if they manage October properly. So really, it's just 4 very, very important months of the season where Valverde is going to have to worry about rotations, about putting players in situations where they're going to succeed in big matches who aren't necessarily that Gala 11. You can't continue to throw them out all of October. It's physically impossible and it's not conducive for a successful March and April and May. So all that said, Adil, we did cover plenty of topics. Again, it's the beginning of September, so the news about Barcelona is every single day. It's daily, but we do our show once a week, so we appreciate, again, that since we're doing one show and not two like we used to last spring, that we have jam-packed shows that go a little longer. So we appreciate you, the listener, for sticking with us, and I appreciate you, Adil, for, again, times got messed up at the beginning of this, but I'm glad we had you on, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dan. It's always a pleasure to be with you. My best to you and to Francesc, and hopefully we will talk soon on the pod.
And Adil, the last thing before I let you go, I'll ask, where again can people find you?
Mainly on Twitter, at Barca19Stats.
So again, there's plenty of good stuff. You'll see that the Barcelona podcast, we retweet him. He does, again, have the deep dive and the hard looks, and it's difficult to fit that in a tweet, but somehow Adil's able to do it. But again, thanks for listening to the Barcelona podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barca.